Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of the Logistics Podcast by Vitron. My name is Robert Weber, and today I have two guests. First, Johannes Meissner from Vitron. Johannes, welcome to the podcast.
Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good afternoon, good evening to Matt Swindles from Australia, from Coles. Matt, welcome to this podcast.
Yeah, good evening. Other side of the world, other side of the time zone.
It's good day or goat day. What? How do you pronounce that in Australia?
We would say g'day.
G'day. G'day. Okay. So g'day to Australia. Before we start talking about your logistics warehouse project, please introduce yourself briefly to our listeners. Johannes, please start.
Yeah. I'm Johannes Meissner, CEO of Vitron. My personal story, I'm around 37 years with Vitron and made my way from the software development over the project management to my current role, where I mainly oversee the project delivery and the related technology stack from Vitron.
Okay, perfect. And Mats, please introduce yourself briefly. Three sentences.
Thank you. I am the Chief Operations and Supply Chain Officer for Coles, currently with a remit that has got manufacturing, automation, distribution, transport, stores, digital business, and new ventures. So quite a wide portfolio.
Can you please share some insights about the Australian retail market? What is maybe special in the market? Can you share some figures, some facts about the Australian retail market?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, obviously we are an island and we're quite a remote island. And as such, the geographical distances that we travel in all of our kind of retail businesses can be quite material. The population of Australia, I think, is still sub 30 million in an area space-wise as large as Europe. So that tyranny of distance is a challenge. But we've got great food here in the grocery space. Fresh produce is 96% grown in Australia. Meat from a legal and regulatory perspective, fresh meat, all has to be sourced domestically. So it's got its own challenges around sourcing. It's got a great agricultural and very dynamic industry here too. We have got quite a lot of export, particularly into Asia. And the average kind of demographic and profile of Australia is very diverse. We've got, I think, the largest Greek community outside of Athens still. The largest migrant population has gone from being, I think, English to Chinese to now Indian. And so that then plays itself into different culinary tastes and diversity. So it's a fabulous place for a retailer to be, and it's a wonderful place to live with all of that richness within it. It's quite competitive and growing in terms of competition. So we have got traditionally two main supermarket grocers in Coles and Woolworths. But of course, now we've got the rise of Amazon. We've got Aldi, the discounter here. We've got Costco is very present. And it also has a very vibrant independent retail community. So you will find butchers, you will find produce, you will find bakers outside of many a supermarket, and many high street is a real eclectic mix of independents. And that brings great competition and great outcomes for the consumer.
You already mentioned the e-commerce giants. Which role does e-commerce play in your business?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think over time, and particularly through COVID, as e-commerce accelerated, that channel has gone from being a part that customers would utilize for convenience to really what we would now see as being one of many channels in which customers interact with our business in that true omni-channel customer experience. E-com penetration is double digit in the two main grocers in Australia and is still growing. So we're around about 11-12% e-com penetration.
Oh, wow.
And of course, with that comes, you know, incredible ways to showcase offers, both in terms of range and value and quality to the consumer, but also the complexity and cost of servicing customers in much more convenient modalities than historically would have been. So within our business, we have got next day delivery. We've got click and collect, which is the what you might see in other markets, the drive up.
Sure, in France, yeah.
Yeah, correct. And we've also got what we call immediacy or rapid, so that less than 1 hour super convenient top-up shop. You know, and alongside shopping traditionally in stores, there's lots of different ways to interact with the customer for lots of different missions. And that's quite exciting in terms of opportunities to really delight customers in different ways.
It's exciting, but it's also difficult.
It is difficult, but I think that's what makes retail interesting. And in a modern retail environment, you have to meet the customer where the customer expects to be met. And so in a world that's becoming much more digital and consumers are more comfortable with interacting digitally with business, those expectations rise. And as retailers, we have to match that. And we have to also balance the customer, the team member, the supplier, and the shareholder. And it's never been more interesting, but it's also never been more complex, more technically reliant, and also more challenging in terms of getting that balance right. But you're right, it does bring a degree of difficulty that historically wouldn't have been there.
We will talk about the different channels later when it comes to the warehouses or logistics or distribution centers. But Johannes, from a Witron point of view, what is special when it comes to the Australian retail market for you?
Yeah, for sure. As we go back, as we signed this contract basically in 2019 for the first two sites, so Australia market was completely new for us. We learned a lot throughout this implementation of these two projects. On the one hand, also on the construction side, it's a different environment. Things are, our project execution is different in Australia as it is around the world. Not fundamentally, but the interesting topic is always that you have to comply basically with everything from health and safety to regulations and so on. On the other hand, I think there's a big opportunity for us and learning, especially in the retail business, was to understand that things are highly, I would say, concentrated. Therefore, the size of the installations, what we have installed there in Brisbane, in Sydney, it was a new dimension, a new size for us also to find here logistic solutions which are at the end still fulfill all the goals of efficiency, safety, and the other opportunities what are expected with such logistics platforms was quite a learning for us also.
Mats, we already had an episode together back in COVID times.
Mm.
What has happened at Coles since then? What does more flexibility through automation means at the end now? And what is your competitive advantage now?
Yeah, so I think since COVID, we've delivered the two automated DCs, the two Witron DCs, one in Queensland and one in New South Wales that Johannes just mentioned. And they are both significant investments for our business that were very high profile, both to the investor community, our shareholders, our board and leadership team.
So automation was totally new for you, right?
Well, to the extent that a Witron solution is there, yes. We've had about two decades of goods to person through old legacy national distribution centers, so slow ambient goods in Schaefer. But this was really our first big foray into automation at scale. And actually, it's the single biggest investment Coles has made in its 105-year history. So that comes with a responsibility we took very seriously. COVID was a challenge to get those open on time, and we did deliver them together on time, in budget and to spec. And that's a credit to the capability of both teams, but also the solution and expertise of Witron. And from that point onwards, really, the facilities have been outstanding. They've really delivered exactly what we expected them to from a business case perspective, and probably more. In some instances, we've seen benefits in wider parts of our business around availability, around the store processes, not just for things like aisle-friendly pallets for ease of replenishment, but also inventory accuracy, reductions in the amount of time it takes to maintain stockfile to drive replenishment, the reduction in lead time, the improvements in delivery frequency from the consolidation regimes. It's just such a compelling case when it lands. That it's really providing, I think, for us a differentiation, not just around efficiency, which of course is a core component, but also on service and the ability to deliver for the customer. And in a world where the omni-channel customer's expectations are higher, you do need an omni-channel operating model. And that distribution center fulfillment to store or to a customer fulfillment center is the critical first step in fulfillment. And with the Witron solution, we believe we've got a competitive advantage with the capability we've got there to get that service level up. Since we spoke, we've also delivered two Ocado CFCs. And in New South Wales, the Witron system then is actually the inbound supply to the Ocado system, which then is giving us another structural advantage in terms of both breadth of range and fulfillment levels. And that's where I think for Coles, we're starting to see a number of real strategic partnerships where we've gone to see globally who is the very best. And we've committed to a longer term relationship where when we start plugging these things together, the multiplying effect they have is quite outstanding. And Witron has really been at the heart of that.
But from my point of view, that sounds like a massive change management process for your whole organization.
It is. And it's an important point because when we entered the Witron partnership, it wasn't a supply chain project. It was an enterprise-wide project. And we were really clear from the CEO and the chair down, we're going to do this together because the way in which you really derive value from the technology is by aligning people and process at either side of the operating model from the customer right back to the supplier. And there is a huge amount of work that then takes place to make sure that the commercial teams, the transport teams, the store teams, all of the different moving parts in the end-to-end supply chain all understand their role in making this technology really land well initially and then start to drive value. And once you get people understanding the capability, they get quite excited and you then get people coming up with even more ideas and better ways of what I call then optimizing that part of the system in the wider end-to-end operating model. So we've always been very clear, this has been a Coles and Witron partnership at the very highest level and an enterprise-wide change management approach. Now, we don't always get that right. I think I've said previously, we should have probably got the transport team more engaged earlier because there are clearly some closer dependencies there.
Why is it so important?
Because moving to an automated facility or really moving to technology that is structural like this in any part of your operation means that the outputs are only as good as the inputs. And you will only be as good as the lowest common denominator in that process. So if you've got gaps, you know, they are evident immediately and they make a material difference. An automated system is a manufacturing facility. It's not a distribution center. As retailers, we love the cut and thrust. We like the adrenaline of the here and now. And we like to be able to move quickly to meet a problem or try and change to capture a sale. And I'm not saying that the Witron system doesn't enable you to do that. It absolutely does. It gives you a very solid base to trade off. But you have to be more thoughtful and more planned and more organized and more collectively joined up on process to really enable that to happen.
How do you handle that?
Well, I think it comes back to everybody in the organization understanding at the very start of the process, you know, what's the why here? We could carry on deploying manual distribution centers out more and more, but there becomes a challenge then around workforce. It's limited in terms of distribution, range, customer outcomes. And so when the technology curve hits a certain point of capability and cost, then the rationale for that migration is clear, but everyone has to understand their role in it. So once that's been defined, the project itself then in terms of scope has a wider remit. You know, we didn't sit through steering committees talking about just the flow of products through the internal systems or even just the data that needs to be accurate for the products. We talk about the supplier engagement and we talk about it in years in advance, not months or weeks. So everybody gets the chance to play a role and everyone therefore is vested in the outcome. And then these buildings are so impressive and they're so impactful when you see them. Everyone has a sense of pride because they played a role in the success of it. So It's a big engagement piece as well as change management.
Okay. Johannes, we already had an episode on this topic, right? Change management. And from my point of view, or what I learned in this podcast episode we had together, Vitron supports the customer when it comes to the whole change management, right?
Absolutely. As Matt also mentioned here, for the success of such project or this transformation where our customers are going through, especially the change management, the understanding that it's not just a DC, it's a kind of factory with all the processes and data which such a facility surrounds is very important. This understanding that we will not just build a new building and processes and current behavior stays the same. This understanding that the change management goes on here to be able to go forward in this transformation is absolutely key to the success of projects and to the success of such a transformation.
Let's take a look inside the, how do you call it, the factories, the warehouses, the logistics center, distribution, omni-channel warehouses. What does the material flow look like? What system, key figures, and special features, Johannes?
Yeah, if you look on a very high level on this round about 66,000 square meter buildings.
So it's Brisbane and Sydney, right?
Yeah, it's basically a twin. That was also, I think, a learning here that twins, especially if we talk about supply chain transformation, helps also the teams, helps in efficiency. But if you look on one of these buildings, like Brisbane or Sydney, around about 66,000 square meter, as we say, a kind of factory, if we look on a high level on this, we induct around about 5,000 pallets a day from hundreds of suppliers into this building. Inside the building, we transport and store all volume made out of, I think it's around about 18,000, 19,000 different retail SKUs, what we are handling in there, and process afterwards this volume, more than 90% really from door to door, fully automated. It means that we automatically depalletizing, decanting, and afterwards store and pick individual on case and piece level in a store-friendly manner. Which finally, as we look on the outbound side, we ship per week around about 4 million cases in a store-friendly manner, packed and cube optimized also for transport to around about 200 SKUs. In a nutshell, even if it doesn't look so, if you are standing in the middle of such a building, you find clear and I would even say simple processes and material flows in inside of such buildings. From my point of view, the differentiator is at all processes, that all the processes are really fully automated, which brings efficiency and all the key elements what we are looking for. And you can imagine in such an environment, the right control and orchestration of all these processes and elements is for sure key. This control and orchestration of Vitron's core is Vitron's core contribution to such a fully automated logistic platform.
Matt, what are the specific characteristics of material flow in Australia or in your warehouses, in your, let's call it, factories? What is so maybe special?
Well, if I point out the geographical distances again, and these two facilities are ambient, I should add. So they carry the 19,000 products are all ambient products. We have manufacturing locations, or our suppliers are not based in every state. And so historically, we would have had a two-speed network, so fast lines in every state. And there are roughly five states that we would distribute out of. And in a Vitron system, we can put them all together. So a supplier can come in across their entire range into one facility, and we don't have to carry excessive quantities of inventory that we would normally have to do, and we can consolidate the supplies in. So it's about fewer truck movements inbound and also fewer truck movements outbound to stores. But importantly, that provides a higher frequency rate for the slow-moving lines. And in Australia, the ambient product ranges are very highly promoted. So we would have 6,000 promotions across our range at any one point in time, changing the majority of them on a weekly basis. A number of them could be very deep discount too. So they might change from being a very slow product at full price, particularly down health and beauty categories, non-food categories, to then becoming extremely fast for just a week. Now, that's really hard to do when you've got only two stocking points nationally and when you've got all that range in the same state, even though some of those geographical distances in the secondary transport are still quite far. It's a material improvement in ability to supply because the lead time is less. The reaction from the frequency to shifts in demand is quicker. And overall, we get a better forecast over time and we get better inventory process in the store. So the structural shift is significant for us by being able to carry that range closer to the customer in a highly promoted market where suppliers are really generally located in just one part of the country.
Do suppliers and partners need to rethink their processes?
No, not really. There are some smaller changes that we had to work through around pallet configuration. And they actually weren't new. They were just not necessarily being as well adhered to as was previously done. But on the whole, the process doesn't change. It's about adherence, though, to promotional planning, range planning and assortment. It's the ability of a supplier to hit a delivery in full on time metric to the facility and the ability for the transport carriers and providers to hit the windows that they've booked to. None of that is new, just that the volume of movements is higher. And I would say for the supplier, I call them free sales. You know, if you get your product into a retailer and we manage to get it in front of the customer, the difference between a successful delivery and a failed delivery is the difference between free sales or no sales. And so, of course, the supplier wins in that process too. You know, we've made these significant investments. We can service their products even better than before. So everybody wins.
And not sure if I got you right, but it started as an automation project and now it is a total transformation of your supply chain, or am I wrong?
I think we always knew it was a transformation of the supply chain, but I don't think we quite understood how transformational it would be across our wider business.
What does it mean?
Certainly the improvements in not just store feedback of the configuration and the standard of pallet stacking. You know, there's nothing worse than working in the back of house of a shop. The delivery comes in, and for all the right intentions of the team up the supply chain, for whatever reason, the pallet's collapsed. It's gone over on its side and you've got to restack it and reload it. That just does not happen. And the ability to have a higher frequency of deliveries means there's a steadier flow of volume. The ability to get aisle friendly means it's easier to put away. Now, of course, in the change management process and in the deployment, we got a number of those configurations wrong at different times. I mean, I remember at one stage, the transport team asked for us to configure outbound to cube the trucks as much as possible. And it did. You know, the beauty of the Vitron system is it will do whatever you program it to do. But of course, the aisle-friendly configuration went out the window. And so the store feedback was immediate. You know, we've now got all of these products spread across all of these pallets. We've got to break them down. We've got to put them back together. But they understood we're working through a change program and we were able to reverse that out and be a little bit more considered with the changes that we make. But that's the level of impact you can have. And these facilities are rated for 4 million cases a week plus. So you're really dealing in very, very large scale volumes that can be easily and immediately configured to a number of different possibilities. It's quite a thoughtful process you have to go through with all of your stakeholders in that model.
Now you have a modern infrastructure, right? A modern warehouse, a modern factory or whatever we call it. But now the work starts, right? When it comes to data, when it comes to optimization, about new supply chain roles. Which role does data play in this game, Mats?
It's huge. And I think we're only just scratching the surface of the capability. I spoke recently about the wider investments that we've made as a business at Coles between transport management systems, clearly Vitron, clearly our Ocado CFCs, but we've also made significant investments in our store rostering and activity planning systems. And so we see a world, and we're actually already embarking on the journey where we take all of those structural digital assets and we integrate them into one kind of data control tower. And what we think is really exciting is the ability to then configure those assets quite dynamically to customer demand, to the trends that we see and the areas we need to respond, and have a way of flexing and a way of executing because of those assets that has never really been seen anywhere else before. And that is the part that data will play. If you then think about what could AI do in that world too, you know, how do we have an agentic AI kind of capability that sits across the top of that data layer that can look at all those inputs and say, well, I want to now optimize for the customer and the team and the shareholder in a certain way backwards. And I want to learn over time how to really optimize that asset. Because you're talking, again, it's 4 million cases a week. It's across in Queensland, 250 stores. It will be 30,000 team members, anywhere around probably 5,000 trucks. You know, these are big operations that historically have been run kind of independently to a certain standard. And now we can integrate them to work together to harmonize their operation and drive an incredible outcome for the customer and also deliver for efficiency. And that's the part that we're now really excited about and are certainly partnering with Witron heavily on.
From my point of view, in the moment when we talk about agentic AI or agents or something like this, it's a little bit of hype, right? So we need to find real world use cases to implement those agents. Or am I wrong, Matt?
No, I think you're wrong. And the reason I say that is I don't think that the agentic AI part is the harder part to deliver. I think what you have to have is the investments up front in the structural capability in the first place. And, you know, you don't build a 40-com, 4 million case Witron facility quickly any more than you deploy a transport management system that can control a fleet to a degree of granularity that gives you the ability to then change, any more than you build teams that know how to work together and utilize those assets for a common purpose. I think that's the harder part. And the piece that we do have at Coles is a two-decade program of work to build replenishment systems, team member rostering systems, the transport, the Witron, and the CFCs. They are now in place. The AI component has to sit across the top, but is, I think, going to be the easier part for anyone who has the assets. But you have to have the assets and the people in the first place.
Let's talk about people, Johannes. Witron was a newbie in Australia when you started the first project with Coles. How was the collaboration between, let's say, the Bavarian guys and the Australian guys? Was there a match already? Or can you describe a little bit the collaboration between both companies?
I would say from the beginning, we all know that Australia is completely new for us. Therefore, we were pretty careful. As we know, the success of projects has always three factors. It's on the one hand, for sure, technology, which we know very good. On the other hand, processes and governance, where, you know, over hundreds of projects, what we have delivered already, we have a pretty good framework. But we know that Australia probably as to execute projects will be different. And we know out of all of our projects at the end, it's a third component. It's most important people, teams, which are working together, have experience, taking over responsibility. And I think we found with Coles, with the team which we were working together back in 2019, a really good fit. That gave us basically the confidence really to step into this market.
And you already started a new project, right, Matt, in Melbourne, or am I wrong?
No, we have. And if we thought that Queensland and New South Wales were big, we've gone even bigger. So this is a 44-com ambient facility that should do north of 4.5 million cases a week. And without scaring my own team, I think one day it could even get to 5. Which I never thought was a possibility in a single site. I think just coming back to Johannes's point on team, you know, we intentionally put our very, very, very best people on this project from the start. And we also made sure that there was a consistency and a continuity of that team all the way through the project into ramp up, into go live. And it really is a great experience and a great development opportunity for the right people. But it is such a big investment from our side that we had to make sure we had our very best people on it. And we also spent quite a bit of time with the Witron team to make sure that the culture and the relationships between the two businesses were very aligned. Because again, these are multi-decade strategic partnerships, and you go into them as a marriage rather than as a bit of dating. And we wanted to make sure that was aligned. And I think both organizations culturally are very similar, very thorough. They do what they say they're going to do. We don't make commitments that we then can't deliver on. A good, solid work ethic and a very people-focused. I like the fact that at the Witron Parkstein facility, there is the gallery walk of all of the team members over the years coming through their development. There is consistency and expertise there that is absolutely outstanding.
It's all about trust, right?
100%, because you know at some point this thing's going to get difficult, and you need to make sure that you've got people that when you pick the phone up, they're there and they're ready to work together. And it's not about whose fault is it. It's about how do we work together and keep moving forward. And Witron culturally are fabulous.
How important are the on-site teams for you, Matt, as a building trust that everything runs smooth?
So super important. And I'll give you a little quick story. When we had the Queensland site open first, at Coles, we will go and travel around the different states with parts of our executive team and parts of our board. And we will bring a number of our own team members together to have dinner and ask them how the business is going and what else we could do. I remember going to Queensland for one of those trips, and we brought the Witron team to the dinner in Queensland as part of our team. And we'd never done that with a third party before, ever. And it was a real statement. I made a point at the time of saying, you know, you are part of our family here because we are so closely linked and so dependent on each other's success. I think that is a critical part of operating these facilities. They're not run in essence by third parties in some areas. They're run together as one team working one way.
Mm-hmm. Can you please summarize at the end, what are the main advantages for Coles, for the customers of Coles, for your employees at Coles, maybe for the environment, for the society? What are the main advantages when it comes to the new warehouses?
Sure. Let me do the obvious ones first, and then I might get a little bit different. So the obvious ones are, it is more efficient. There is clearly shareholder value there. It also gives us capacity to grow our business. And the days of a supply chain being an efficiency cost play as opposed to a growth play, I think are well and truly gone. We are here to enable this business to grow in the best way it can. The service, the ability to get great availability to the consumer, particularly when the customer offer is becoming more complex, wider ranges, more modalities, is critical. And the importance of making it simple for the store team. And the easier we make it to run a shop, the better the shop is and the better the customer and team member engagement is. And finally, importantly, obviously, safety. You know, having the processes and the flows and the automation just makes this a much safer place to operate and a much more sustainable environment, fewer trucks, less pollution. And we also have solar on these facilities too. I think that on every metric we hoped and wanted to achieve, that scorecard is fully green. The part that's a little less obvious, and you only really see afterwards, is the pride and the confidence it creates in the business that we can actually deliver a project of such significance and scale to such a high standard, I think has really given our supply chain team in particular a kick on in terms of the art of the possible. There's a performance lift that comes through it, and that then plays into how the business thinks about delivery and execution. And again, in retail, sometimes we don't value enough. Having great execution for the customer is also great outcomes for the shareholder. And I definitely can feel a sense of pride in this organization when we show anybody around out of these two facilities. You know, we are incredibly proud of the work we've done and what we've achieved. And we're incredibly proud to be partnering with Vitron.
Mats, what does Retail 2030 look like at Coats? 5 years.
Wow, that's a let's assume I'm still here to look at it or otherwise. I think that there will be an increasing expectation from the customer that there is a wider range, that there is a more convenient series of modalities to choose from, that fresh is fresher, that value is greater. And that probably Coles understands the needs of the customer to an extent to which the data enables us we've never had before. I think with that then comes the need to use technology and data and these structural assets to be able to provide the right cost to serve ratio to run a business that capitalizes upon that and really delivers for the customers and communities and shareholders at the same time. And I think it probably also creates an environment where the roles for the team are more advanced, are more technically enabled, and are more exciting than ever before. So I think in 2030, this is an incredible business that's probably still got the core DNA of being an amazing grocer and servicing the communities and customers through stores, but has got this additional capability driven through technology of really having an understanding to another level of what a customer could want and the ability to service that in an amazing way.
Johannes, you will travel to Australia, I think, in July again. What is on your agenda in the next 5-6 weeks?
Yeah, it's mainly for sure, as you mentioned, we have a third project, very important that we deliver another masterpiece in Australia, our full focus. And as Matt said, I can just copy it. We have a team there in Australia, which is really proud that they were able to deliver these two masterpieces over there. On the other hand, for sure, we are always looking also together with our teams on the two existing sites, because as Matt also mentioned, it's a framework. We see it as a base, but there are a lot of value still there. If we look especially on the horizontal integration there, therefore from supplier up to the store, where this transformation has a lot of opportunities, especially if we go deeper into the data and the use of the data, there's still a lot of optimization work which can be done.
Johannes, Mats, it was a pleasure. Thanks a lot. Greetings to Australia and greetings to Packstein.
Thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you very much. It's great to talk again. And I'll sign off with another good day.
Thank you.